to a higher pitch. Jeannie sat back fast. Right. But, what did she used to do before?
She was a nurse.
Oh, good. So she can take care of you.
She don't take care of me,
Grandpop snapped again. Suddenly the phone rang. Grandpop put his hand up, making it clear that he wanted Jeannie to hold on. The phone started speaking in a robot voice, calling out the numbers of whoever was on the line. Jeannie could hear the voice in the kitchen, in Grandma and Grandpop's bedroom, and even in the bathroom. It was like they were surrounded by bots all shouting out numbers, which was both weird and cool.
Who is it?
Grandma called through the screen door.
Just the church, Grandpop said.
Why didn't you answer it? Jeannie asked. He figured people always answered the phone whenever the church was calling. Just seemed like the right thing to do. Maybe they were going to tell Grandpop about a miracle to fix his eyes.
Cause you and me shooting the breeze. Plus, they want to pray for the sick, and that's nice and all, but I ain't sick,
Grandpop told him. And before Jeannie could even think on whether or not Grandpop being blind was, in fact, a sickness, especially since he said glaucoma was a disease, another question popped out.
How did you know it was the church? You memorized phone numbers?
Yep.
Even mine?
Even yours.
I don't believe that.
Why not?
Because you never call, Jeannie said. Grandma does, but you don't. Grandpop looked toward the window, which was kind of weird since he couldn't see out of it. He ran his tongue along the top of his teeth, then turned back toward Jeannie.
Well, I know it, still.
Then what is it? He tapped his forehead with his pointer finger.
I'm not sure. Shucks. I swear this has never happened.
See? Jeannie knew Grandpop couldn't have known. Grandpa poked him in the arm. How did he know his arm was even there anyway? Then Grandpop said,
I'm joking. 646-555-8349. I can tell you your daddy's cell, your mama's cell, and their work numbers too if you like, boss, and your address.
What is it then, my address? Jeannie couldn't seem to stop testing him.
It's 346 Mason Street, Brooklyn, New York, 11233.
The man on the radio was laughing about something, then said,
It's just unbelievable.
And even though the announcer was talking about news, it seemed like he was talking about Grandpop. Jeannie smiled and took another sip of tea.
So what else you got?
Grandpop prompted. Okay, Jeannie thought madly for a next question.
Got it.
Why you wear those sunglasses if you can't see no sun? Grandpop laughed just like the man on the radio had.
Why do I wear them? Because they look cool. Why else?
That was the same reason Ernie wore his all the time. Total Pete and repeat. Jeannie looked at his reflection in Grandpop's shades. Then he held up a finger and moved it close to Grandpop's face. He just had to try it.
Get your finger out my face and ask the next question,
Grandpop demanded. Not in a mean way, but definitely in a serious way. Jeannie yanked his hand back so fast he banged it on the table.
Ah,
he hissed, flicking his hand around like it was on fire. Grandpop just grinned. Okay, Jeannie said, massaging his fingers.
Do you just sit here all day?
Do I what?
Of course not. That's no way to live. Plus, this seat is too hard on my old butt.
Jeannie wanted to follow with, but you got a gun back there, so don't that hurt it? But for some reason, he just couldn't bring himself to say it. So he asked, How do you know where your room is, though? Or what if you gotta go to the bathroom?
I'm only blind, son. My junk still works.
Grandpop's shoulders began to bounce up and down.
Not like that, Jeannie yelped, busting out laughing. I mean, how?
I count. Count? Jeannie raised one eyebrow. Math? I hate math.
I used to, but now I love it because I have to use it every day.
What you mean?
Counting. From my room to the kitchen, 13 steps. From my room to the bathroom, 10 steps. From the kitchen to the bathroom, 16 steps. From the kitchen to the front door, 11 steps. It's all counting.
That's cool. It was cool. And it was also cool that Grandpop was letting Jeannie ask all these questions without getting upset about it. Ernie would have punched him by now. And by the way, where was Ernie? Still out there with the dog? It'd been forever. Plus, Dad made it very clear that they were supposed to look out for each other. Plus, Jeannie was nosy. Plain and simple. So he asked Grandpop for a timeout while he went to check where Ernie was. Out on the porch, Jeannie was surprised to discover that it was actually hotter inside the house than outside.
A small bird hopped along one of the wooden floor planks. It had deep blue feathers along its back all the way down to its tail, which seemed to split in two like a snake's tongue. The blue of the bird came up over its head and eyes like a hood, but under the beak and all along the chest, the feathers turned reddish-orange. Genie had never seen a bird like it. He was used to pigeons, birds that matched the color of the concrete. Nothing like this. A bird that matched the color of the sky and the country dirt. It pecked at something in between the cracks. Genie slowly squatted to get a better look without scaring it off. But of course that didn't go as planned. In one quick fluid movement, the bird lifted its head, turned it all the way around, spied Genie, and flew away. Genie jumped off the porch and headed around the side of the house to where Ernie was stroking the top of Samantha's head and whispering in her ear like a weirdo.
"What you doing?" Genie asked.
"Teaching her some stuff," Ernie said.
"By talking to her?"
"Yep, there's a whole TV show dedicated to this method," Ernie said, all confident. He had a way of saying stuff that made Genie believe it, even if it really didn't make much sense.
"If you say so."
Then, looking around and not seeing Grandma, Genie asked where she was.
"I don't know. Probably on the other side of the house,"
Ernie said, then began that whispering business with the dog again. Genie had only come out to see if Ernie was cool, and he was cool, so Genie was cool. Back at the front door, Genie remembered what Grandpa said about counting his steps and decided to test it. It took him 13 steps to get to the kitchen. Grandpa said it took him 11, but Genie figured that was because his legs were longer. Grandpa was still at the table, turning the dial on the radio, trying to clear up the fuzz. Genie sat back down, feeling good about the fact that he had checked on Ernie and was ready to dive back in with the questions.
"Now, where were we in this interrogation?"
Grandpa asked.
"Interrogation? I mean, interview," Grandpa teased.
Then he slipped in.
"Detective?"
Detective Genie Harris. Or maybe Detective Littlewood. Either way, it was kind of cool.
"Okay, let's see." Genie put his hands together and tried to think. "Does Grandma pick out your clothes?" "Why, you don't like them?"
"They're okay."
"Good, 'cause I pick them out myself."
Grandpa made a fuss at brushing nothing off his shoulder.
"They all black and white?"
He laughed.
"Ha, no way."
"Then how do you match them up?" Genie asked.
"Funny you should ask, detective. Touch right here."
Grandpa unrolled his shirt sleeve and held the cuff out.
"Right here, feel that?"
Genie ran his finger over the fabric, hitting a cluster of little bumps, like the shirt had invisible goose pimples.
"What's that feel like?"
Grandpa asked.
"I don't know," Genie answered, unsure. "Close your eyes," Grandpa instructed.
Genie closed his eyes and rubbed his fingers over the same bumpy spot. He didn't know what he was supposed to be figuring out.
"What is it?"
Genie opened his eyes. He had nothing.
"It's a W. Stands for white. That's how I know this is a white shirt I got on," Grandpa explained.
Genie rubbed his fingers over the little notch one more time, and then it became clear.
It was, in fact, a W. "Your grandma started sewing initials into everything for me when we found out I was going blind. Fancy little stitches called French knots. A blue shirt has a B, a red shirt an Ara. My trousers have the letters sewn into the waistband, and even my socks have them, so I never look crazy."
"But you are crazy, remember?" Genie reminded him. Grandpa laughed again and put his hand on top of Genie's head. He did it with no hesitation, like he knew exactly where his head was.
"How'd he do that?" "Yeah, but the key is to never look crazy."
Grandpa rolled his sleeve back up to his elbow.
"Anything else?"
he challenged. The iced tea was almost gone, and it had actually started tasting pretty good. As a matter of fact, Genie wanted more. Thing was, Ma was big on not being too greedy when you're at other people's houses, so Genie didn't want to ask Grandpa for it. But dang, it was so hot, and the tea was so cold.
"Yeah, what's your name?" "Grandpop."
"No, your real name." Grandpop looked at Genie, and for a second it seemed like he could actually see him, like he looked at him.
"Brooke."
Genie had heard Grandma say the same thing, but he hadn't been sure he'd heard her right.
"Brooke? Like the girl's name?"
Grandpa flashed a thin smile.
"Is it a girl's name if it's my name?"
Genie had never really thought about it that way. He had never heard of a man named Brooke but could relate to it being a girl's name because Genie was a girl's name too. There were some guys back home who teased him about it. That is, until Ernie came around. Then they quieted all that,
Your mom wanted you to be a girl and Jeannie, the girl with the weenie stuff down. But Grandpop had a girl's name as a guy's name and was cool with it. So maybe his name wasn't necessarily a girl's name after all. It was just his. Guess not, Jeannie said at last. He took the final swig of the tea jar. It still felt weird to drink from a jar. Wait, one last question. Grandpop whipped the cloth from his shirt pocket again, like a magician does before turning it into a bird. He wiped his neck with it, then his forehead, then stuffed it back into its place.
Last one.
What was your job? Grandpop folded his arms and leaned back until the front legs of his chair rose up off the floor.
I was in the army, fought in Vietnam, 1st Battalion, 6th Infantry. My position was rifleman.
Like, rifles? Your job was to shoot rifles?
Pretty much.
Their dad had told him in Ernie stories about Grandpop teaching him how to shoot when he was younger, but he never said that it was because the old man was an expert, that it was pretty much his job to shoot. This, of course, set Jeannie off.
Is that why you have a gun in your pants?
He asked with what seemed like perfect timing, but his excitement wouldn't let him wait for an answer. He just barreled on.
Wait, so can you teach me how to shoot?
Grandpa froze. Then he looked at Jeannie again.
Now, little Wood, Grandpop cleared his throat. I'm afraid you'd have already asked your last question.
4. Question time over. Jeannie went back outside, but this time his grandmother had something to say about it. She stopped him on the porch.
Now listen here. You ain't gonna keep running in and out of my house all day, hear me? You either gonna be in or out. So which will it be?
Jeannie squinted in the bright light to scope out Ernie, who was now shaking Samantha's paw before responding.
Out. Good. So stay out. I don't want to be chasing flies around the kitchen all afternoon.
As Grandma went in the house, Jeannie checked the porch for that sky dirt bird again, but it wasn't there. So he headed out into the yard, farther and farther until he reached the spot where the cliff began. It was as if someone had snapped the land off, jagged and uneven like torn bread. The drop was steep. But what was even more fascinating than the cliff was the view. The sky seemed bigger than he had ever seen it. Full of white clouds, Jeannie pretended were in the shape of pistols, Grandpop still on his mind, until he snapped out of it and they turned back into big shapeless cotton balls. And there were so many trees, lush and green, peppered by only a few houses, a yellow one with black shutters, a white one like Grandma and Grandpop's. The roof caved in and half the house charred black, two red houses side by side. Those were the ones that really caught Jeannie's eye. They were at the very bottom of the hill, across the narrow road that led to the entrance of his grandparents' property. There was someone on the porch of one of the houses, a person down on all fours, banging on something.
Hey, Ernie, Jeannie called out. Check this out.
What? Ernie said, jogging over. He looked down the hill.
Who's that?
You think I know?
Doesn't look like a grown-up, Ernie said, putting his hand to his brow to block the sun.
Is that a girl?
Looks like one, Jeannie said as they both stared at the girl in the red house as if they had never seen a girl or a red house before. A green car came up the road and turned into the yard of the second red house. The girl raised her head and waved at the driver, who tooted the horn, then bumped through the grass around to the back of the house.
What's she doing?
Ernie asked, now the one with all the questions. Jeannie didn't answer, as he was trying to figure out the exact same thing. Judging by the constant banging, she was either fixing something or breaking something. Maybe a piece of wood from the porch had come loose and she was replacing it. There were a few cracked ones on Grandma and Grandpop's porch that could use a little touch-up, so maybe that's what she was up to, Jeannie was thinking when Ernie slapped his arm.
Come on!
And he started down the hill. Jeannie scrambled after him, trying to step easy, but dang, that hill was steep. Too steep. Gravity yanked them both toward the bottom a lot faster than they had expected. They started to slide and whoa, doing everything they could to stay upright. Ernie had better balance. You had to have it to be any good at karate. I mean, he could stand on one leg for 74 seconds. Jeannie had counted. Jeannie, on the other hand, didn't have that talent. And after a few seconds of sliding down the hill, he slipped. And let me tell you, there's a big difference between a slip and a slide. A slide is an almost slip, but a slip, now that's a problem. A slip leads to a fall, but Genie didn't just fall. He fell and tumbled. Feet overhead, feet overhead, feet overhead, over and over again, grunting and thumping his way to the bottom, leaving a cloud of dust and burnt, dried-up grass trailing after him.
Genie!
Ernie cried, cautiously sliding as quickly as he could to the bottom. Genie lay flat on his back, his arms spread out as if he was making a snow angel, a grass angel.
Genie!
Ernie repeated, panicked, now standing over him. You okay? Genie opened his eyes, his chest heaving.
Urgh, he moaned, reaching out for Ernie's hand. I'm okay, stupid hill.
But once Ernie got him back to his feet and made sure that he wasn't broken all up, the fear turned into funny, at least to Ernie, who tried his best to fight his smile.
It ain't funny, Genie said, embarrassed. He examined his knees and elbows for scrapes and blood. You better not laugh.
Ain't nobody laughing, man, Ernie said, a gumpy grin smeared across his face.
Hey!
A voice cut right between them, reminding them why they'd come down the hill in the first place. Genie looked up. Across the road was a girl, the hammering girl. She glared at them, still on her porch but now holding the hammer up like a weapon. She was dressed in cutoffs and a t-shirt. No shoes, no socks. Her skin was as dark and shiny as a wet street, and so was her hair. She had it yanked back in a messy ponytail.
Who y'all?
Genie and Ernie stood frozen like two statues, one dustier than the other. Ernie got it together first.
Sorry, he said. Sorry, didn't mean to scare you.
He put his hands up as though making sure she knew they had come in peace. The girl, who looked about Ernie's age, wiped sweat from her forehead and squinted as if he and Genie weren't actually there, as if they were a mirage. She raised her hammer even higher when Ernie jumped a small ditch and walked across the road into her yard, Genie following, slapping grass and dirt off almost every part of his body. Reaching the porch, undeterred by the hammer, Ernie introduced himself. I'm Ernie, and this brilliant acrobat here is my brother Genie. He waited for a smile.
Got nothing.
We visiting our grandparents for the month, he pointed back up the hill.
Who?
The girl said, lowering the hammer, but just by an inch.
Ma and Pop Harris?
Genie nodded and wondered if the girl was somehow related, since she referred to Grandma and Grandpop as Ma and Pop.
Yeah, Ernie said, nodding. You know them?
Everybody know them, the girl said, now setting the hammer on the porch.
So y'all their kin, huh?
Ernie looked at Genie. Genie shrugged.
Kin? What you mean?
Kin, she repeated.
Lord, y'all don't know what kin is,
she hopped up.
Means family, related, blood, she rattled off, flashing a duh face.
Oh, yeah, Ernie said, trying to regain some cool. We their kin.
Well, y'all ain't from round here, obviously, so where y'all from?
Genie spoke up.
Brooklyn!
Brooklyn, Ernie confirmed, a step behind. There's something about calling out Brooklyn that makes you feel like you've grown a few inches. Maybe sprouted some hairs on your chin or an extra lump in your bicep. And when you say it, your whole body goes into the word.
Never heard of it, the girl said, her eyelids lowered to the so what level.
What? Ernie balked.
Nah, of course I know what Brooklyn is. You city folk just always be thinking we country folk don't know nothing.
But we be knowing, she smiled.
We be knowing.
Colorful rubber bands woven over metal braces covered her teeth, a rainbow in her mouth.
I'm Tess, by the way.
Now she jumped off the porch, landing a foot away from them.
So why y'all come down here?
To see our grandparents, Genie said, thinking Ernie had already made that clear when he said they were kin.
No, I mean down here. What y'all want?
Well, we saw you banging from up there, and so we were just wondering what you were doing. After Genie said it, he realized how creepy it sounded, like maybe he and Ernie were stalkers.
Fixing something?
Ernie added quick.
Nah, Tess said, looking back at the red porch. I ain't fixing nothing, I'm making some stuff.
She climbed back up to her workstation, the boys cautiously following. On the porch were two coffee cans, a red cup, the hammer, and a pair of wire cutters, and one nail. In this can, Tess held one up, are beer bottle caps. She took a cap out and set it on one of the wooden porch planks. Then, without any kind of warning, she took the hammer and bam, bam, bam! Whacked the cap over and over again until it was flat. Both Ernie and Genie jumped, then tried to recover quickly so Tess wouldn't notice.
especially Ernie. Ernie really didn't want her to notice. Jeannie could tell.
Tess held the mashed cap up and looked proud, as if she had just dug up a piece of gold.
Perfect, she declared, setting it back down.
Jeannie thought it looked like a coin from a different country. He had never seen any coins from anywhere else, but he wouldn't have been surprised if quarters in Mozambique looked like flattened beer caps.
Then, Tess went on, what I do is I take this nail here and put it right at the top of the cap like this.
She positioned the nail near the edge of the beer cap. Then I make a hole. She tapped the nail lightly with the hammer until it punctured the metal. Now she reached into the red cup and pulled out a little fish hook. After that, I take one of these and put it through the hole. But first you gotta clip the ends or they might stick you.
Using the wire cutter, she snipped the pointy end of the hook, then stuck it into the hole she had just made in the bottle cap.
Then you twist it like this so it don't come out.
She twisted the hook a few times, then dangled it up in front of Jeannie and Ernie.
Boom! You got an earring!
A earring? Ernie said, holding his hand out.
Tess gave it to him.
Yep, she held the other coffee can up. It was full of them.
I sell these bad boys down at the market. Y'all want to try? I mean, I usually wouldn't offer because, you know, it's bad for business. But I doubt y'all finna cut into my profits. Plus, y'all kin to Ma and Pop Harris, so I'll make an exception.
Ernie jumped to it so fast that Jeannie knew Ernie's old girlfriend was about to be history. Too bad for Ernie. He had never actually used a hammer. He was pretty decent at smashing the cap flat, but when it came to hitting the nail, he definitely had some issues. As he dropped the hammer down, missing over and over again, Jeannie started firing off the questions that had been bouncing around in his head since Tess started this whole explanation.
Where you get all those fish hooks from? He asked first, hovering over Ernie, who kept bumping at Jeannie's leg, trying to get him to move back.
Where I get them from?
From a fisherman. Where else?
Well, what does he use to fish with if you got all the hooks? Jeannie persisted.
Why would a fisherman give up all his fishing hooks? That was like a basketball player giving up his basketball. Just didn't make sense.
Not just any fisherman. My daddy. And he don't fish no more. Roanoke River too far away. Plus, there ain't been no real bites in a long time.
Well, where'd you get fish from then? Jeannie now wanted to know.
Ernie shuddered, clearly frustrated with both Jeannie's questions and the nail he was struggling to hit.
Let me think, city boy. The store?
Tess teased.
Ernie laughed at that, finally hitting the nail through the bottle cap.
Jeannie cracked an awkward smile, embarrassed, but not so much that he couldn't ask another question.
What about the bottle caps? You got a lot of them. Where'd you get them from?
I know you're not gonna believe this, but I drank all those beers, Tess patted her belly.
This time Jeannie laughed, because he knew she was joking.
Seriously, Ernie joined in, where did you get all these?
Tess picked up the green bottle cap Ernie had just flattened and holed. She snipped the fish hook, slipped the hook in the hole, twist, 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 then tossed it in the finished can.
Come on, I'll show you.
She hopped off the side of the porch and headed around to the back of the second red house, the one right next to hers. Jeannie and Ernie trailed after her, exchanging what the looks. There were a few cars parked back there in no particular order on what used to be grass, but was now mostly dirt, and tire tracks made it clear that there were usually a lot more than a few cars there. Tess led them up the back steps. A small sign with Marlins painted on it hung from a nail against the white door, which Tess now pushed open and walked through, Ernie and Jeannie at her heels. It only took half a second for them to realize that they hadn't walked into a house, they had walked into a bar.
Hey, Jim, Tess said, heading for the counter as if it was no big deal that she was a kid.
In a bar.
The man, Jim, was skinny all over, arms, face, neck, but he had a big belly. Like a having a baby in a few days belly.
There was another man there, sitting at the bar. He was old, had a gut as big as Jim's and a long gray beard. Black Santa.
Tess walked past him and pulled out three stools. She hopped onto the middle one and patted the two on either side of her, a signal for Jeannie and Ernie to come sit.
Tess the mess, the bartender greeted her. Who are your friends?
Ernie and Jeannie took their places on the stools.
This here's Ernie and Jeannie, Ma and Pop Harris' grandkids. They from New York.
Oh, ho, 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 Jim said.
New York, huh?
Well then, I gotta give you boys the North Hill special.
Oh, that's okay. We good, Ernie said, confidently waving the man off.
Come on now. You boys cool with a little drink, yeah? Make it three,
Tess said, slapping her hands on the bar, excited. Jeannie and Ernie exchanged another, what the? How was it even possible for kids to order drinks at a bar? Maybe it was a country thing, because in New York, you couldn't even sit at a bar if you weren't 21. One time when Jeannie and Ernie were hanging out with Dad, they popped into a restaurant for a quick bite. The place was packed, so Dad asked if they could sit at the bar, just for lunch. The answer, no.
Three specials coming right up.
I don't, Ernie, now less confident, started.
Shh!
Tess quieted Ernie. You ain't fitting to come down here to North Hill, sit your stank city butts at our bar, and not have a special. Ernie swallowed the rest of his words. Jeannie played repeat and hoped he wouldn't get drunk on his first sip. He had seen the drunks in his neighborhood. They all looked so relaxed, but talked so angry. Like, yelling, but not saying words. Just sounds. Besides the oldies playing low on the radio, there was a buzzing coming from the door every few seconds. Jeannie looked over and noticed a lantern-looking thing glowing above the door frame. Tess caught him gazing.
It's a zapper.
A zapper?
Yeah, for flies. They love that blue light. Every time you hear that buzz, that's another fly going bye-bye off to fly heaven.
Tess put her hand to her lips and blew a kiss at it.
Thank you, fly zapper!
While Tess turned her attention back to the bartender, Jeannie stared at the glowing blue light.
Buzz. Cringe.
A few moments later, three specials were sliding across the wooden bar. Black Santa took a few gulps from his own glass, the same kind of glass that now sat in front of Jeannie, Ernie, and Tess. The same color liquid, too. Golden. Bubbly. No straws. The man looked at Jeannie, then lifted his glass.
Cheers, young buck!
Jeannie nodded awkwardly and looked over to Ernie, waiting for him to take the first sip. Ernie lifted the glass to his mouth. Tess flashed a rubber rainbow smile. Ernie didn't say anything. He just raised an eyebrow and smirked, letting Jeannie know it was okay to take a sip. Jeannie recognized the taste instantly.
Ginger beer?
He asked, surprised. Whenever they ordered Jamaican food at home, Ma always got ginger beer with it. It was the perfect soda for a spicy food, and apparently for tricking naive city boys like Jeannie and Ernie. Tess and Jim burst into a howl.
City boys!
Jim scoffed, holding his hand up.
City boys,
Tess repeated, completing the high five. Jeannie flushed, embarrassed once more, but also super happy to have the ginger beer because the thirst was real.
Buzz
went the zapper again.
Listen, shorty, Jim now said to Tess, his laughter tapering off. I've only got a few. You're early today.
He reached behind the bar and pulled out a Ziploc bag with a few bottle caps in it.
Tubbs there needs to drink more beer,
he added loud enough for Black Santa to hear. The bearded man scowled at Jim and held his fist up.
It's cool, Tess said. I was just popping in to show these guys what was up.
She took another chug of her soda, then hopped off the stool. She was a hopper, Jeannie thought.
My daddy here?
Jim took her glass, tossed the leftover in the sink.
Yeah, he downstairs. Want me to get him?
Nah, it's cool. I'll see him later.
Ernie and Jeannie slid off their stools.
Thank you,
Ernie said, taking a final swig.
Yeah, thank you,
from Jeannie, extra genuine because he was thankful. Thankful and relieved. Relieved the special wasn't beer. Well, not real beer, anyway. So relieved. Jim reached out for a shake.
Anytime, he said. Pleasure to meet you, boys.
His palms felt rough, like he had been smashing bottle caps flat, too, but without a hammer.
And welcome to the country.
They had only been in the bar for 15 minutes, but during that time, the big blue sky had become a big gray sky. The wind had picked up, and the smell of rain ghosted through the air like dinner cooking. As soon as they got outside, they heard Grandma standing at the edge of the cliff, hollering their names. They said bye to Tess, and as the rain began to sprinkle down, Ernie and Jeannie scrambled back up the hill. 5.
Where were y'all?
Grandma asked as Ernie and Jeannie huffed their way to the top. The hill was definitely way harder to walk up than to walk down, or fall down, and Jeannie was surprised at how out of breath he was. There were no hills in Brooklyn, not like this, at least not in Jeannie and Ernie's part.
Down there hanging out with some girl named Tess,
Jeannie told her, sucking in air as Grandma proceeded to march them back to the house. You know her, 'cause she said she know you.
The screen door slapped the frame as Grandma closed the wooden door behind them.
"Yes, baby, I know her," she said, grabbing Ernie by the shoulder and steering him away from the kitchen.
Without elaborating on Tess, she went on, "Ain't neither one of y'all about to walk in my kitchen with all that outside on your hands. Hit the bathroom and wash up. Been out there with that dog and God knows what else." She said it the same way she had said it to Dad at breakfast. Then boom, thunder, loud enough to shake the walls, loud enough to scare the nails out of the floor and peel back the linoleum. Jeannie looked up at the bathroom ceiling as if he could see the clouds through it. As he scrubbed his hands clean, the thunder hit two more times, back to back, like the sky was literally cracking open.
"Your mama and daddy called. They made it back home safely, and it's a good thing they left early, missed this here storm,"
Grandma said when Jeannie and Ernie came into the kitchen. She looked up at the ceiling just as Jeannie had done a few moments before.
"Lord, I hope it don't be too bad. Glad I started dinner early, 'cause ain't nothing worse than being hungry in the dark."
"Got that right,"
Grandpa said, coming from a door just off from the living room, which was just off from the kitchen, glass in hand. It wasn't his bedroom door or a closet door. It was a different door, one that Jeannie hadn't even noticed until that moment.
"What's in there?"
Jeannie asked in his usual nosy way. Ernie didn't seem to care. He was poking around by the stove, seeing what was for dinner. Grandpa pushed the key into the knob and turned it. Then he gave the knob a rattle to make sure the door was locked.
"None your business,"
Grandpa snarled, but playfully. He slipped the keys into his pocket and motioned for Jeannie to sit. Jeannie, of course, now wondered what was in that room. On top of that, he still wondered about that gun he had seen earlier and reminded himself to tell Ernie about it. And on top of both of those, he wondered what was in Grandpa's cup. That vinegary smell sure wasn't sweet tea. As a matter of fact, he didn't really wonder what it was at all. He knew exactly what it was. That smell, the same smell Jeannie had just gotten more than a whiff of in Marlin's, reminded him of Miss Swanson, the drunk lady who hung out at the laundromat back home. Grandma shook a little bit of this and a little bit of that into the pots on the stove, shooing Ernie away, telling him to go sit down. While she cooked up the food, the aroma of onions, peppers, and garlic overpowering the stench of Grandpa's liquor, Grandpa cooked up a few stories. Memories and jokes about how he used to be a better cook than Grandma, but how nowadays she had a leg up on him, or as he put it, a two-eyed advantage. Unbelievable tales about being a child and watching his father slaughter and gut pigs from the rooter to the tooter. But most of the stories had to do with all the craziness his sons, Dad and his brother Wood, which Jeannie found out was short for Sherwood, got into when they were kids.
"Let me tell y'all about this boy," Grandpa began. "Gary Daniels, down the road there, who used to always pick on the younger kids after school. He was big for a child. Hell, he was big for a grown-up."
Grandpa took a sip from his glass, his face twisting up as he swallowed.
"Anyway, this boy, Gary, everybody called him Cake, came up to your daddy one day. I think Ernest was in the third grade at the time, and Wood was in the sixth. And I think Cake was in the eighth or ninth, but he looked like he was old enough to sign up for the military. Cake came up to Ernest and started patting his pockets, aiming to take whatever Ernest had, which wasn't much because we ain't had much to give him. Now, this here's what Ernest told me. He said Wood came out of nowhere and whopped Cake in the back of the head with a book as hard as he could."
"Oh, man," Ernie said, leaning forward. "Probably knocked him slam out," Jeannie added, hyped.
"Knock him out? Cake was huge," Grandpop's voice went high. "All I did was tick him off. Wood came home with the blackest eye I've ever seen, and a busted lip, and he was limping."
"Dang, Uncle Wood should have learned how to block,"
Ernie threw his hands up and demonstrated a few of his favorite karate blocks, clearly forgetting for a moment that Grandpop couldn't see.
"What about Dad?" Jeannie asked.
Grandpop picked up his glass and swirled the liquid around.
"Not a scratch. And you know what Wood said? He said, I'd rather Cake beat on me than on my little brother."
Jeannie watched Grandpop sip his drink again and thought about how proud Grandpop seemed to be of Dad and Uncle Wood, which also made Jeannie think about how unproud Dad seemed to be of Grandpop earlier.
"Exactly," Ernie said, puffed up. "Except ain't nobody gonna beat on either one of us."
He slapped Jeannie lightly on the arm, then cracked his knuckles. Jeannie felt a smile coming on account of Ernie's words, but he held it in and asked and said,
"So nothing ever happened to Cake?"
Thunder boomed, and Grandpa braced himself on the edge of the table. It was only for a second, but Jeannie caught him.
"Oh, something happened, all right,"
Grandpa said, trying to regain his calm.
"See, they all grew up. and Wood joined the army. And one day, when your daddy was in high school and Wood was home after basic training, they bumped into Cake at the fair. They had a few words, because see, Wood would never let things go. He got that from me. So when he saw Cake, they said whatever they said, and then Wood gave him the blues.
Beat him down, Ernie asked.
Blew his daggone candles out, Grandpop cheesed and reached out for Ernie's hand.
That's what I'm talking about, Ernie said, slapping Grandpop's hand.
At that, Grandma turned all the knobs on the stove until they clicked, turning the flames off.
Okay, that's enough of this heathen talk. Dinner's ready.
She pulled a stack of plates from the cabinet, then loaded each with baked chicken, mashed potatoes, and greens. But as soon as she set them all on the table and taken her seat, boom! And the house went dark. Grandma got right back up, grabbed a candle, lit it, and put it in the middle of the table. No big deal. Jeannie couldn't remember thunder being that loud in Brooklyn. He also didn't really remember the electricity ever going out either, but Grandma's response made it seem like she was used to it. She was already sitting back down and digging into the food.
Dang, country life.
But after a few bites, Grandpa set his fork on the edge of his plate.
You boys want to hear something?
Lord, Grandma groaned.
No, not another story, something else.
Sure, Ernie said, nibbling on the knobby part of the chicken leg.
Sure,
Jeannie Pete repeated.
Sweetheart,
Grandpa said charmingly. Jeannie knew Grandpa was batting his lashes behind his sunglasses. Grandma shook her head and relented.
Okay, sure.
Well, since you insist.
Grandpa lickety-split, dug into his pocket, and the first thing Jeannie thought was that Grandpa was going to whip out his gun. He definitely didn't want to hear that. They already had thunder, and didn't know why Grandpa would do this during a dark dinner. But Jeannie also didn't know why Grandpa did a lot of things, like carry one in the first place. Turns out, Grandpa was reaching for a harmonica. He held it up, the silver glinting in the flicker of the candle flame.
You know how to play harmonica?
Jeannie asked, instantly intrigued. Grandpa tapped it on the table a few times before bringing it up to his mouth.
I dibble and dabble, he said.
Then he pressed the metallic bar to his lips and started blowing and sucking, moving the harmonica back and forth like a cartoon character eating corn on the cob. The sound was like ghost music, especially since they were in the middle of a thunderstorm in a room lit only by a candle. Grandpa played and played, his cheeks inflating and deflating, his head rocking side to side, the sound sometimes really, really quiet and other times piercingly loud. There was one part where Grandpa even made it sound like a train, choo-chooing. A ghost train. Spooky. But cool. Very cool, Jeannie thought. He completely forgot about eating. Ernie, too. Grandpa didn't stop until he was sweating and totally out of breath. Grandma leaned over and rubbed his back as he tried to get his wind. Jeannie and Ernie clapped like they just got a free concert or something. Grandpa just nodded. It was like he had blown out all his words.
6.
After Jeannie and Ernie remembered to start eating again and finished with what they found out was Grandma's specialty dessert, banana pudding, there was nothing really left to do because, one, the storm. It was raining cats and dogs, more like bears and elephants, and, two, the entire house was dark, so they went upstairs, Grandma leading the way, holding the candle in one hand. After she took two steps, maybe three, into Jeannie and Ernie's room, crunch!
What was that?
She set the candle on the blue dresser and started feeling around for a flashlight in the top drawer. She clicked it on, the bright white light beaming across the room for a second, before she aimed it at the floor.
What in the world is this doing down here?
She asked, bending down. It was the red truck. She picked it up, but one of the wheels stayed on the floor. In pieces. Cracked like hard candy. Cracked, apparently like Grandma's heart.
Oh, no.
She cried.
Oh, no,
she repeated, her voice instantly dipping into sadness. Jeannie thought about whether or not this was one of those truths he should keep to himself, but he couldn't.
Grandma, I left it there.
He started to explain. Then, realizing that that wasn't enough of an explanation, he decided to explain more.
I just left it there when Ma told us to put the suitcase in the car, and I thought we would come back up to the room. But then you said I couldn't go in and out, And so I stayed out, and I didn't know it was going to rain and the lights would go out, because the lights never go out in Brooklyn, right, Ernie? And I just didn't know they would go out here. If I knew all that stuff was going to happen, I wouldn't have left it there. But it was an accident. I swear it was, Grandma, and I'm so sorry. Jeannie's voice became beggy. He got down on one knee to pick up the pieces of the wheel, dropping the larger half in his palm, pinching at the smaller piece with his fingers. And just when he had it clenched, the tiny bit of plastic slipped from his grip, hit the floor, bounced and rolled like a pebble, before, in what seemed like slow motion, falling through a crack. Jeannie immediately put his face to the floor, peering desperately between the wooden slats into the darkness downstairs. Then, with his heart in his throat, he looked up at Grandma. Her hand was over her mouth.
Grandma, I'm so...
Shh! Grandma interrupted, holding her hand out, the truck in her palm on its side. Jeannie dropped the bigger piece of wheel beside it.
It's fine,
she forced between her teeth. Accidents happen. She set the three-wheeled model back on the dresser where it belonged and arranged the wheel chip next to it. She didn't say anything more. She didn't have to. Jeannie could feel her sadness.
You boys, sleep tight,
Grandma said softly, setting the flashlight on the dresser next to the truck. She took the candle, gave Ernie a hug, kissed Jeannie on his forehead, and headed down the stairs. She still smelled like soap. And chicken. And now, disappointment as well. Jeannie changed into his basketball shorts as the rain continued to come down hard. He sat on his bed with his notebook and imagined himself trapped in a staticky TV, a place where you couldn't see or hear or understand anything. Number 442. Why am I so stupid? Why did he have to leave the truck on the floor? Why? His first day at Grandma and Grandpa's house, and he had already messed up. The first day! He just couldn't believe it. He hated making mistakes. All he could think about was how he had to make it right. He had to fix it. But how? Don't worry about it, Jeannie. It was an accident, Ernie said, pulling his shirt over his head. Jeannie wondered how Ernie always knew when he was beating himself up. An accident times two. Accidents, Jeannie emphasized. I just feel so bad. Yeah, but that ain't gonna fix it, Ernie said straight. You know that. So you might as well not even worry about it right now. Jeannie nodded, shook his head, then nodded again, deciding he would figure it out, but not tonight. He needed a fresh mind to even begin to think about what to do about the truck. Not a mind full of his parents maybe divorcing and bottle caps and fishing hooks and fly electrocutions and thunderstorms and lights out and harmonicas and questions he still needed to write down about guns and old blind men's waistbands, and the flashlight was giving off just enough light for him to do so. So, number 443. Why would a blind man have a gun? And then Jeannie realized he hadn't told Ernie yet. Yo, I meant to tell you. So, you know, earlier today when you were outside with the dog and I was sitting with Grandpa? Well, when he got up from the table, he had a gun sticking out the back of his pants.
What?
Ernie had been looking at his muscles in the mirror, and Jeannie figured the lack of light might have been making them look bigger. You say something about it? Yeah, but he ain't answer. But what he did tell me was that he used to be a shooter, back when he could see. Like, that was his job, Jeannie added. But he can't see now, so why would a blind man, of all people, need a gun? Ernie turned away from the mirror and leaned against the dresser. Man, I don't know. Maybe he needs it for protection.
Protection from what?
Protection from everything. From the world. I mean, think about how dark it is up here. Somebody could just come in this house and go all psycho on Grandma and Grandpop and no one would ever know. Ernie nodded, agreeing with himself. You seen the movies, man. Grandpop's probably trying to make sure he don't get slashed. Ern, stop playing, Ernie chuckled. Jeannie, don't worry. He jumped into fighting stance. We safe, and I don't need no gun. But seriously, maybe Grandpop just keeps it with him out of habit. Like, if I went blind, I would still want to wear my shades every day. Even if I couldn't see myself in them, I would still want to wear them because they're a part of my life. I still would want to be fly, even if I can't see how fly I am. Maybe that's how Grandpop feels about being a shooter. He's always going to see himself as one, even if he can't actually see himself as one, you know? This sort of made sense, but Jeannie didn't respond with anything other than a oomph. He turned back to the notebook and began writing like mad. Number 444. Does Grandpop still see himself as a shooter? Is who we are only based on what we do? If so, are Ma and Dad just arguers? Will they become divorcers? And am I a model breaker or just a questioner? And if I become a rich and famous questioner, does that make me a questionnaire? Number 445. What kind of test do you have to take to be a shooter? Do you get a grade? Can you still be a shooter if you get a C? Technically, you still pass. Number 446. What or who did Grandpop shoot? Number 447. What does it mean to shoot the breeze? I know one thing. Ain't no breeze nowhere around here for Grandpop to shoot. Number 448. What does a month of Sundays mean? Has there ever actually been a month of Sundays? Maybe the first month of Sundays was the January after Jesus was born. Number 449. Is the sun hotter in the south? If so, then a month of Sundays makes more sense. Number 450. The rooter to the tutor is stupid. Why not the yapper to the crapper? Or the thinker to the stinker? Number 451. How come thunder don't seem so loud in Brooklyn? And how come the lights never go out at home? Number 452. Why am I so stupid? Scratch that. Number 453. Why am I so stupid? Nah. Number 454. Why am I so... Ugh, no.
That was a crazy story about Dad and Uncle Wood, right? Ernie asked out of the blue. Jeannie knew Ernie was trying to distract him, and he appreciated it because his questions started to tumble downhill just as he had done earlier. Ernie had dropped down to the floor and was doing push-ups. It was his nightly routine, 50 push-ups to keep his body in fighting shape, as he put it. 7, 8, 9, he gasped out. Jeannie closed his notebook for a moment, his fingers stuck in to keep his place, and thought about what he would have done if he had been in that cake situation. If he would have been able to take up for his brother like he knew Ernie would have taken up for him. If he would have been able to even take up for himself. He wasn't sure. He had been in a few small scuffles with kids at school over the girl name thing, but nothing serious. A little shoving, but no face hits. Nothing that required calling for backup. But still, what if? He didn't know anything about protecting himself except for the few moves he'd learned watching Ernie practice. Well, the few moves Ernie did on him, a leg sweep and a roundhouse kick. Jeannie flipped the notebook open again. Number 455. Would I fight for Ernie? Then he scratched it out because he knew he would. Of course he would. Plus, there was no internet answer for this anyway. His brain continued surging with questions, lots of questions from a long, long day. Number 456. How come glaucoma isn't called eye-coma? Technically, Grandpop's eyes are sleep, right? Eye-coma. Makes more sense. Number 457. Why would flies fly into shocker lights that kill them? Tess said they can't help it. They just love the light. Maybe it smells like dog poop. So many questions. So many questions. Number 458. Grits? What exactly are they? And I get that they're called grits because they're gritty, but who thought that name was a good idea? That's like naming peas green slime balls. Number 459. If I put sugar on peas, will they taste better? Probably not. Stupid. Such a stupid thing to think. Why am I so... Scratch that. Then he thought of a question for Ernie. But Ernie asked one first. What you think about Tess? Ernie was now doing sit-ups. Jeannie's mind was far from Tess, but he tapped the pen to his lips and replied anyway. She cool. What you think? I think she cool too, but I mean, you think she like me? Man, I don't know. We just met her. Jeannie stuck the pen in his mouth like a cigar. Don't take long to know, little brother. Trust me, I knew Keisha liked me the day we met. But Keisha broke up with you. Ernie stopped mid-sit-up. What's that supposed to mean? Nothing, man. I think Tess is cool. And anyway, it's nice to know we're not the only teenagers around here. You ain't no teenager, Ernie scoffed. He was ticked off about the Keisha comment. Jeannie could tell. Man, you barely won. Don't matter. I'm 13. 13. Almost 14. Then he finished his sit-ups, double time. Jeannie lay back and looked over his questions, ignoring the diss. Strangely, of all the questions Jeannie had, he didn't have any about the red fire truck.
There were no questions to be asked about it besides one, and Jeannie already knew the answer to it. Question: whose fault is it that it's broken? Answer: Jeannie's. But Jeannie still had one question for Ernie, one that had been burning him up.
Hey, Ern, what's the deal with Dad and Grandpa? Like, Dad didn't seem too happy to be around him, and I heard Grandma telling Grandpa that Dad would eventually forgive him or something like that. But forgive him for what?
Now Ernie was practicing his front kicks. He paused, balancing on one leg. For making Uncle Wood join the army, that's my guess. Look, Dad told me that Uncle Wood wanted to be a firefighter, but Grandpa pressured him to go into the military, like he had. So Uncle Wood did, and then there was a war, and he died in it, Jeannie filled in.
Exactly,
Ernie said. And what I think is Dad blames that on Grandpa.
Ah, and that's probably why Dad became a fireman.
Ernie looked at him in surprise.
Yo, I never even thought of that. Dang, probably so.
He lowered his leg, most likely a world record, and took the flashlight from the dresser to set it on the floor between the two beds. He must have been finally done with his exercise routine, because he crawled in the bed. Jeannie knew that it was only a matter of minutes before Ernie was out. He just couldn't stay up without a TV, and even if there was one, he'd still be dozing. It's just how he was. If Ernie was comfortable, he was snoozing. But Jeannie couldn't unwind that easy. The sounds of this night were different from last night's when all the nighttime critters had been out to play. Couldn't hear the rain on the roof in Brooklyn. Not like this. And that made Jeannie think of the crickets.
Yo, Ern, when it rains, where all the crickets go?
Huh? Ernie grunted, already half asleep.
The crickets, where do they go when it rains?
I don't know. Write it down. Look it up.
Ernie mumbled. Then he added,
maybe they're out there, but you can't hear them because the rain is too loud. They don't drown? Seems like it would be easy for crickets to just drown raining this hard.
Ernie didn't respond.
Ern.
Ernie was already knocked out. It couldn't have been more than 2 minutes. That had to be a world record, too. Jeannie wasn't sure if it was the rain pouring down or all that sweet tea Grandpa had let him drink. But as soon as he got comfortable and finally started drifting off to sleep, he had to pee.
Of course.
He thought about trying to hold it until morning, but he was scared that he would have that dream where he'd be going to the bathroom, except he'd actually be going to the bathroom in real life and whiz all over the bed. And he was way too old for that. Plus, he couldn't deal with another disappointed grandma moment. So he got up. There was only one toilet in the whole house, and it was all the way downstairs. Question to remember. Why would a house with a room upstairs not have a bathroom upstairs? Jeannie crept super slow down the dark steps, trailing his hand on the wall. The house was making noises, like knuckles cracking.
Quiet, house!
He didn't want to wake Grandma and Grandpop. When he finally got to the bottom, he heard a sound. Maybe a mouse. It was coming from the kitchen, clicking and clacking over the shushing sound of rain. Whatever it was, he didn't care, because he just had to get to the bathroom. He slid his feet on the floor instead of picking them up. Quieter that way.
Click. Clack, clack!
It was too loud to be a mouse. Jeannie peeked around the corner, and even though he couldn't see anything in the dark, he could tell there was somebody sitting at the table.
Hello?
He whispered, nervous, slinking through the living room. He didn't want to just pop out and scare whoever it was.
Jeannie?
It was Grandpop.
Sorry, I just have to pee,
Jeannie said, gliding through the kitchen and onto the bathroom. 16 steps. 17 and a half for Jeannie. When he came out, he asked Grandpop why he was still up.
Maybe Grandma snored loud, too.
Not really sleepy. The rain does that to me. Keeps me awake.
Jeannie could smell that liquor smell again.
Me too, he said, even though if it wasn't for him having to pee, he probably would have been asleep.
Too much thunder. Yes, that, and not enough Brooklyn. Oh, and a brain full of pistol and broken truck. Grandpa kicked the chair out from the table so Jeannie could sit. It was dark, but after a few seconds, Jeannie's eyes adjusted and he could see his grandfather. Not like, see him, but see him enough to know he didn't have on a shirt, and that there was a glass, a bottle, and some kind of container in front of him on the table.
Here, have some ice cream,
Grandpa said, pushing the cart in Jeannie's way.
It'll help you feel better about the truck. Plus, it's going to melt anyway.
Grandpa wiped the spoon off with a napkin and held it out. Jeannie took it, more than a little nervous about Grandpa knowing about what had happened to Uncle Wood's fire engine model. Jeannie wanted to say something about it, but his nerves got the best of him. Grandpop, who had gone back to clicking whatever he was clicking, somehow realized Jeannie wasn't eating the ice cream yet. He stopped what he was doing.
Seriously, son, it was an accident. Grandma'll be fine. She's okay.
Jeannie thought he saw Grandpop smirk. He wasn't sure, but he definitely heard it in his voice. Then Grandpop got back to the click-clack business. So, of course, as Jeannie finally dug the spoon into the carton, he asked, "What you doing?" Grandpop didn't answer. Now he was screwing something, too. Was it his harmonica? "Grandpop, what's that?" Jeannie asked, remixing the original question. Grandpop sighed like he really didn't want to talk about it, which made Jeannie feel bad for asking. But then Grandpop took a sip from his glass and said,
"A revolver. You know what that is?"
That wasn't at all what Jeannie was expecting him to say, and in that moment he was super happy Grandpop couldn't see, because Jeannie's eyes were bugging.
"A revolver? Like a gun?"
Jeannie wondered if it was the same pistol he had seen in Grandpop's waistband earlier in the day. He had never seen one whole, and he definitely never seen one all in pieces.
"Yep, the one you asked about earlier," Grandpop said,
like it was no big deal. He screwed something else, then clicked and clacked it some more. "Why you break it?" Jeannie asked, scooping out a fat frozen strawberry. "Best part."
"It ain't broken,"
Grandpop explained.
"It's called disassembling. It's something we used to do all the time when I was working. Not with this kind of gun, but same deal. I've taken it all apart, now I'm putting it back together."
Jeannie thought that was weird. He had never heard of anyone taking a gun apart. "Why you doing that?" A thunderclap rocked the house again. This time Jeannie barely jumped, but Grandpop jumped big time.
"Thunder's gonna be the death of me," Grandpop muttered.
He took a quick sip from his glass, then got back to the question.
"I do it just to make sure I still can."
Oh. Jeannie thought about what Ernie had said about him wearing shades. Just part of Grandpop's life. I mean, not Grandpop wearing shades, but Grandpop being a shooter. Jeannie thought about how he wouldn't mind it being part of his life, too, so he asked, "Well, can I help?"
"No,"
Grandpop said steely. Jeannie decided maybe he had asked too many questions this time. Grandpop clicked one last time, locking something in place. Then he twisted the skinny screwdriver a few more times.
"There it is."
He set the gun on the table in one piece. Jeannie thought about reaching out and touching it. After all, how would Grandpop know?
"Don't even think about it,"
Grandpop said. He knew.
Dang.
The rain kept pouring, beating against the windows. Grandpop and Jeannie sat there for a few minutes quiet. Jeannie was waiting, hoping, for Grandpop to calm down, and in the meantime, like the meantime, Jeannie continued eating the ice cream, now melted into strawberry milk, which was just as good, until a low, robotic voice cut through the silence with,
"The time is 10:28 p.m.
"What's that?" Jeannie asked.
"Just a clock. Thankfully, it takes batteries."
Grandpop's left hand was on the clock radio he'd been listening to earlier.
"Just checking the time,"
he said, pressing the button again, his voice back to its regular gruff tone, not its annoyed gruff tone. A subtle difference, but a big deal. After the clock repeated,
10:28 p.m.,
Jeannie asked another burning question.
"So remember today you were saying how there's a different number of steps to your room and to the bathroom and all that?"
"Yeah, I remember."
"Well, what about outside? You ever go out?"
Grandpop brushed his face with his hand. It sounded like someone tearing paper.
"Not really," he said. "I mean, I go from the door to the car, and from the car to the doctor's door, and back. That's pretty much it. Shoot, I don't even remember the last time I played with Samantha."
"But why not?" Jeannie asked.
"Good question,"
Grandpop said. Jeannie didn't think it was that great of a question. Not nearly as good as, "Can I help?" But Grandpop blew a hard breath and went on.
"I'm gonna tell you a secret, but you gotta promise to never tell nobody. Got it?"
"He's going to tell me a secret?"
Nobody ever told Jeannie secrets. Seemed like people were always keeping secrets from him. At least his parents were. "Promise," Jeannie said. He was all ears.
"I don't go outside because, well, I guess I'm a little concerned."
"Concerned?" Jeannie repeated. Grandpop cleared his throat.
"See, inside, I know where everything is. But outside, I don't know where nothing is. Things move on their own. Then there's that big old hill. If I lost my bearings and fell down that, It'd probably be my last fall. Too many surprises for an old man that lives in the dark, you know what I mean?
That led Jeannie to figure that concerned was grown-up code for scared.
Yeah, but you never, like, I don't know, just walk around your yard? Not all the way to the edge, but...